Welcome back to Midday. We'll go to the phone lines here. 410-662-8780. Ask Fred to join our conversation from Baltimore. Hello, Fred.
Hello, how are you all?
Okay, good. Thank you.
Good. I've been learning for the last couple of years about this German building standard called the Passive House Standard that is like super strict in terms of energy efficiency, insulation, and ventilation. And I was wondering if it seems like this particular way of building seems to be so energy efficient that a couple years ago I went to the mall in Washington and saw the solar decathlon finalists. These university teams were competing for the most energy efficient and sustainable, livable, comfortable houses. And they had all these like small sample houses on the mall in Washington. And they finally had the finalist, and the winner was this German house using this German standard called the Passive House Standard. And anyway, I'm thinking, boy, it would be great if I were some rich developer to start building green houses to the Passive House Standard concept here in Maryland. That would be really, really efficient. I mean, I know they're, from what I gather, they're kind of expensive because special kind of windows and insulation is not all that cheap.
Fred, I think I know what you're getting at. It's a good question. What effect will the stimulus package and these initiatives have on those who want to invest in green energy in a company like the one you have in mind? Maybe Robert Pollan could address that.
Well, I'm going to speak to it from two angles. One, from my research, but also I am myself actually a small-time green developer with my wife, who's an architect here, and we are actually putting up some houses right now here in Amherst. Fred is right. It is more expensive up front. So you won't get as large a house for the same amount of dollars, but these things are evolving quickly, and the integration of these better materials, more energy efficient materials, the costs are going to be coming down as the market grows. And the stimulus program and the other legislation around that, including these loan guarantees, matching funds, and so forth, there's a lot of opportunity to grab a small piece of that and to help drive the cost down. So it isn't going to be, the people that we're building housing for are not rich. In fact, they're my colleagues here at the university. So it can be done for, reasonable amount of money.
Right. John?
Well, I agree. I think stepping back and looking at there was a little question of how do you invest in this type of thing from an investor's perspective. We've had a lot of investments go into green investing over the last year, a lot of alternative energy investments, which has been great. We do need to remember sometimes investment dollars get ahead of themselves, and we've had a pretty significant collapse in some of the green, especially green energy stocks and investments so far. I do believe it'll come back. I do believe we will recover as a stimulus package drives this industry back. But the difficulty we have right now from an investment community is finding things that are valued right in this space, including some green builders that we're trying to support. And so private equity might go more into it as opposed to a public stock. But this is once in a while the issue you have with trying to invest. And I'm just speaking purely as an investor now. How do we not over-invest in a specific sector? Solar stocks went through the roof and they've came down like rocks because of that.
Let me ask you quickly, ecosystem service markets.
Okay, real quick. Basically what we're saying is the land has value that's not being monetized right now, not being given a monetary value. Water purification, carbon sequestering, biohabitat diversity. These services will start being valued. They have to be valued, especially water quality in this region for sure has to be valued. In fact, there's a group, the Chesapeake Fund, that's coming out that's paying farmers $260 an acre when they qualify for doing water quality practices on their land. And that has nothing to do with the crops they grow. We're using that model to now start financing some redevelopment of land, of parcels, of ag land so that it actually works better within the Bay ecosystem, and they get revenue from these other sources. And again, who's paying for that?
So you assess and evaluate land based on the water quality, in this case, being an asset.
Right, because what's happening is the water sanitation departments need to make the quality of water better and better. They need to reduce the nutrients going into the bay, as an example.
Right.
They can either build a power plant or they can pay farmers to farm more water nutrient-friendly ways and pay them to do that. And that's the market that's emerging in that. And so that's basically what we're talking about. So it's a little more land-based as opposed to infrastructure or green job-based. But if you think about it, that's actually a great extension of the green economy into the agricultural world, which is totally decimated right now. The amount of income farmers make these days is ridiculous.
I just read a story this morning about a farmer going bankrupt, his farm being auctioned off. So a market model to drive conservation and environmental restoration
and sustainable agriculture.
Yeah. Let's take another phone call for our guests here today, Robert Poland from the University of Massachusetts and John Campagna, who's here in Baltimore with Benchmark Asset Managers. Tom in Annapolis, welcome to Midday.
Hi, Dan. I have a couple of quick questions. One, what about nuclear power, where we have, for example, at Calvert Cliffs, probably hundreds of jobs waiting to be able to hit the ground, but people don't seem to want nuclear power in a lot of senses. And the other thing is the not-in-my-backyard situation, where nobody wants windmills off the coast of Ocean City or in Western Maryland on the mountains. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, two good ones there. We could ask about nuclear power, investing in nuclear power. Robert Poland?
Okay, well, first on the jobs issue, as I mentioned at the early in the show, if you spend money on anything, any kind of investment will create some jobs, including nuclear power, including fossil fuel energy. Nuclear power is a very poor source of job creation relative to other things, though. So we want to measure one source of energy relative to the other because, you know, if just imagine it, it's very, very capital intensive. It's a lot of investments in heavy equipment, in uranium and so forth. It does not create many jobs. It only will create about two and a half jobs per $1 million of spending, as opposed to a green economy, which is about 17. So that's number one. I myself am not in favor of reviving the nuclear power industry. The jobs part is one part of the story, but the other part, the more serious part even still, is the issues of safety, the issues of storage of the spent uranium. These are things that have never gotten resolved or can never get resolved. So I say if we're going to spend trillions of dollars, which we're going to spend on rebuilding the economy and the energy system, let's do it in a way that is sustainable over the long term. And that's conservation and renewable energy, not nuclear. And the other point on nuclear, no investor would spend a dime on nuclear power without the government offering insurance. There is not a private insurer that will underwrite the nuclear industry. So if we want to talk about integrating the private sector, nuclear power is not the way to go. There's no such thing as a nuclear power industry without this massive government insurance subsidy.
Now, the other point, the not in my backyard attitude that Tom's concerned about, people don't want to see giant windmills off of Ocean City or off of Cape Cod or up in the mountains of Western Maryland or in Vermont or near Amherst, Massachusetts. It gets me to this question. I'll let you both answer this. And that is what's going on today in part wishful thinking that we hope that, you know, there's this shift in attitude among Americans and people elsewhere in the world that things have really changed now. Some big bubble has burst. We can't keep living the way we did. Do you think this is really hitting home for people now, or once we crawl out of this recession, emerge from this recession, we're going to go back to driving SUVs? Anyway, that gets me to that question. Is it wishful thinking, or is it actually something profound happening among us?
Well, quickly, I do think it's something profound. Now, how we respond is still up in the air. David Brooks had a good column in the New York Times, I think, a week or so ago. He laid out the worst case scenario, and it's a dysfunctional country still at polar odds and defaulted on its debt. I mean, that is not out of the realm of possibility. As an investment person now, we do actually think and consider the possibility that the U.S. might default on its debt because we're putting so much out there. That'd be a catastrophic event in this country, in this world. So I think people recognize there's possibilities like that out there now, and they're going to scale back some of the resistance to some of the old resistance that used to be out there. Getting to not my backyard, I think that's just human nature. And sooner or later, sometimes things will give and sometimes things won't give. You know, we may get windmills off the shore, but not in the mountains. We may get windmills, smaller windmills, not the larger ones. Mm-hmm. So it's, I do think we're moving down a path. You never quite know how far and how quickly.
Robert Pullen, what about you?
Okay, we are not defaulting on our debt, absolutely.
But we have
anyone
to consider.
Anyone that knows anything about financial markets knows that the U.S. economy is not defaulting on our debt. So,
but
I don't
wait a minute,
Robert,
we weren't going to have a 30% downturn or a 95% downturn in the U.S. banking stock, which are the leaders in the world.
Look, the U.S. economy, the interest rates on government bonds are 2%.
Right.
That's because everyone in the world still wants to buy U.S. Treasuries. So it's not happening. It's irresponsible for people to say that.
It's not that I'm saying it's happening, Robert.
If you study World War II, the U.S. fiscal deficit was 28% of GDP.
And we owned it.
Even with where we are now, we'll be at 10%. So we're nowhere close to where we were then. It's not going to happen. So,
but you have to consider it in the calculations.
It's not going to happen.
Okay, let's say
it's not going to happen.
All right,
I don't think it's reasonable for people to say that.
Okay, we'll call that one a draw. But to my my larger question, Robert Pullen, about the sentiment among people, the feelings that we have actually hit a wall here, and that we actually, you know, we need to change the way we live.
I agree with that. You know, the other issue with John's point was he was reflecting the sentiment on Wall Street of investors. And yes, we already know that Wall Street is run like a casino. And that's another thing that we have to stop. It's true that the solar stocks go up and the solar stocks go down, but we can't let Wall Street drive the development of the green economy like we've let them run the economy for the last generation. What we need to do is rebuild a system of financial regulation that helps channel credit into productive activities and discourages casino capitalism. So that's step one. In terms of not in my backyard, you know, wind farms might not look that good now. I guess we could probably make them look good. I mean, after all, people go to Holland and think the windmills are quaint and beautiful. Then windmills are not the only form of renewable energy also. So we have solar energy, we have geothermal energy, who knows if we're going to produce biofuels from algae and so forth. I think we can make the economy look ever more beautiful as long as we pay attention to the fundamentals, which is to make this transition in a way that people want.
Here's a question that came in by email. Don't our Byzantine environmental land use and public domain laws make the creation of new public transit systems almost impossible? Can we reform our transportation and power infrastructures without reforming our legal infrastructure and environmental laws first?
Well, I think yes. This is part of the transition. That's a very good point. The bias against public transportation, the land use systems, which have been entirely geared towards a car-dominant culture, these are things that will change over time. Speaking about having a beautiful landscape and countryside, reducing the dependence on automobiles and not having to have people jammed up in 495 and other freeways, I think that'll help. So these are things, you know, this is all going to take, it's going to take a generation, and it's going to be a step-by-step process. The stimulus program is just one first baby step.
John Campagna, are you hearing from more people who are interested, those who do have money to invest in, maybe down the road a bit?
Right.
Are you hearing from more people like that?
I think there's definitely a desire to participate in what they see as a growth industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this from a perspective of that, this is going to change the way we do business in this country. It's going to change the country. So how do we invest in it? Secondly, many foundations and clients are looking to use their money more effectively. They also want to give grants anymore. They do want to give grants, but that's also a difficulty with a downturn in the market. How do we invest in programs that are going to give capital needed to sustain these efforts, but also do it in an investment as a business and make some return, preserve our capital, and be able to do this again the next day? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of thoughts going on in the industry that way.
And Robert Pollan, just one last question for you. What do you think of some outright spending to create a green conservation corps in America?
Well, I think it's a good idea. I mean, after all, the conservation corps, civilian conservation corps in the 30s, that was the initial green jobs program, and it was a very good program. So, yes, I actually have a client. One of the projects that I'm working for is, the job creation through investing in cleaning up park services and promoting that, and that has an even higher job creation ratio because it's almost entirely 100% labor with no capital equipment, no transportation, no energy costs. So, as one feature of an overall green investment agenda, it works. It works very well.
Our guest in the next hour, Bill McKibben, is a big advocate of that. We're going to have him on the show after the news from NPR coming up here at 1 o'clock. I want to thank Robert Pollan for making some time for us out of his busy day. He's professor of economics and co-director of the Political Economy Research Institute at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. And once again, I recommend reading Doing the Recovery Right, his piece that ran in The Nation in late January, and you can find it online at thenation.com. Thank you, Robert Pollan,
Thanks
for your time.
Thanks very much for having me. Yep. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. And John Campagna, it was nice to finally meet you after exchanging some emails on this subject.
Right.
Thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you.
I enjoyed our conversation. John Campagna, green investment expert with Benchmark Asset Managers right here in Baltimore.
Thank you. Stay with
us, folks. Green Day continues. We're going to continue this conversation that we've started here with Bill McKibben, the acclaimed environmental writer. It's been 20 years since McKibben's influential bestseller, The End of Nature, was first serialized in The New Yorker and published. That was an important book. He's written many since then. And he's headed to Washington for a big protest on Monday that he'll be telling us about. So stay tuned. Those of you who have been reading Bill McKibben over the years, you probably have a question or two for him. You can join us after the news from National Public Radio.